You're listening to Valley Edition. I'm Kathleen Schock. Propositions 13 and 209 were some of the most impactful in California's history. But now their fates are back in the hands of voters, who come November will weigh in on whether to bring back affirmative action and potentially increase property taxes for some businesses. To learn more about these propositions and others, I spoke with Scott Rodd, state political reporter for Capital Public Radio. Ivy Cargyle, assistant professor of political science at CSU Bakersfield, Alyssa Dykeman, research associate at the Public Policy Institute of California, and Ben Christopher, election reporter for Cal Matters. So 1978 marked the passage of Prop 13. It set property taxes based on the purchase price of the property rather than its current value. Now, this year, voters are going to decide on Prop 15, which would significantly amend California's property tax system. Ben Christopher, what is at stake here?
Yeah, so this is certainly one of the most contentious measures on this year's ballot. And in simple terms, it would increase property taxes on many commercial and industrial property owners. So you were just explaining what Prop 13 does. This would separate commercial industrial land from residential land on splitting them into separate property roles. That's why sometimes you'll hear it called split roll. And so effectively what that means is that for commercial and industrial property owners who own more than $3 million worth of property in California, they would potentially see potentially quite large increases in their property tax bill. And this would raise, the Legislative Analyst's Office estimates, between $6.5 to $11.5 billion in California, split between schools and local governments. And you know, just to put that in perspective, you know, the last budget's around $200 billion. So even in California, $6.5 to $11.5 billion is still a lot of money.
So the Public Policy Institute of California has done some polling on Prop 15. Alyssa Dykeman, what did you find?
In our latest poll, we found among likely voters, 51% would vote yes on Prop 15, 40% would vote no, and 9% are undecided. When we look across partisans, we see that an overwhelming majority of Democratic likely voters would vote yes, while an overwhelming share of Republicans would vote no. Independents are divided. And then when we look across regions, support for Proposition 15 is highest in the San Francisco Bay Area, followed by Los Angeles, the Inland Empire, Central Valley, and Orange and San Diego. And so what we see is that Californians are really divided on Proposition 15, with Republicans and Democrats, younger and older voters, and renters and homeowners showing widely different support for this tax and spending initiative.
Ivy Cargyle, as a political scientist, do these poll findings surprise you in any way?
You know, they really don't, because California is an expensive state and everybody realizes that. And so I think that there are always various attempts to try to bridge some of those inequities that exist. And I think that what a lot of people are thinking about with Prop 15 is that this would be that, particularly for, you know, the thought process that large corporations, large businesses, it's not fair that they're not paying the same amount of property taxes that, for example, young people are paying because they just got into the market right now. So I know some of the opinion that I've seen about this talks a lot about, for example, in Hollywood, like the owners of Paramount Studios and a lot of those movie studios and those properties that were purchased decades and decades ago, and the amount of money that the revenue that they make in comparison to a young business that is just now getting started and the amount of property taxes that they pay. So I'm not surprised by this at all.
Scott Rodd, in your reporting on this for Cap Radio, I'm interested what you're finding about the potential implications if Prop 15 passes. Ben talked about the amount of money that it could potentially inject into cities and counties and schools, but opponents of it are concerned that it could have really dire economic implications, arguing that it could push some businesses out of business or drive some major employers out of state. What are you hearing around that?
That definitely is a big concern. And I mean, as with everything, coronavirus is certainly having, you know, an impact on how people are viewing this. It's already a tough time for businesses, and it's already a, you know, rough economy out there. And when you're looking at additional taxes on top of, you know, California already has fairly high taxes, that's a tough pill to swallow for a lot of businesses. And so, you know, yeah, many of them who are opposing it say, look, some are saying we can barely keep our doors open now, and staring down what may be additional taxes on top of that, that doesn't sit all too well with them. But on the flip side, right now, schools can certainly use more funding. Local governments can certainly use more funding. They're also in a tough spot. So, you know, as Ben mentioned earlier, estimates of, I believe it's $6 to $11 billion injected into that could be raised from this. And, you know, that's not small ball numbers. That's certainly a good chunk of money, even in California, where the budget is up above $200 billion.
So, Ivy, I'd like to throw one more question to you before we move on and tackle another proposition. Prop 15 is supported by the California Teachers Association, the SEIU, and Mark Zuckerberg. So some deep pockets there. Not surprisingly, it's opposed by groups like the Howard Jarvis Foundation and the California Chamber of Commerce. What I was surprised to find, though, in my research is that it's also opposed by the California NAACP, as well as the California Black Chamber of Commerce. Can you perhaps explain why the NAACP would come out in opposition to an initiative that would potentially inject a lot of money into schools?
I have two suspicions on this. One is that we're starting to hear the narrative that how do we make sure that those monies are going to go to local cities and they're going to go to, you know, even to cutting small business taxes and all of the different incentives that are indicated. There appears to be some confusion in the public, in terms of public opinion, in regards to how that's actually going to work. And if in fact, some of that revenue is actually going to go to schools, if it's going to go to small businesses. The other thing that I suspect that is happening is that for those few Black small business owners that are still in California that may be affected by this, that's going to further push those people out of the state. And as it is, since the 2008 recession, as well as just the general increases in cost of living, we've seen such a mass exodus of Black Californians out of the state because it is so expensive to be here. So the few Black businesses that we still have in the state of California, this might be that final push to drive them out.
Fascinating stuff. Well, let's move on and tackle another initiative on the ballot that would revisit a landmark proposition in our state's history. I'm talking, of course, about Prop 16, which would undo Prop 209, which passed in 1996 and banned affirmative action. Scott Rodd, what exactly would Prop 16 do?
So as you said, it would bring back affirmative action for things like public hiring by the state and other public institutions. It would also bring back affirmative action for college admissions at state colleges and universities. And it would also offer that sort of preferential treatment for things like contracts and bidding when it comes to public contracts. And, you know, as you mentioned, this is an issue that has, you know, voters weighed in on it in the mid-90s, and it's kind of resurfaced here and there. But, you know, right now it's sort of resonating in a moment where it's side by side with other conversations about racial justice and inequities that continue to persist. And so it's finding a moment right now where there certainly is at least enough interest to bring it to voters and say, you know, we've had you weigh on this before, you know, over 20 years ago. Let's bring it back again.
So this is Ben from CalMatters. Just to jump in on that, I think in some ways the timing, if you want to put it that way, was just right for this measure. This was a measure that was referred to the ballot from the legislature. And this is something that some Democratic legislators have tried a number of times in previous years to get rid of this ban on affirmative action. And it was coming before the legislature just at the time that George Floyd was killed. And we saw this wave of protests across the country. And I think there was some serious grappling with, as Scott said, these long-term structural racial disparities that are at the heart of a lot of those protests. And so I think this was kind of part of that. And it actually passed the legislature relatively easily for that reason, I think.
So it passed the legislature easily, but how is it doing among potential voters? Alyssa, with PPIC, what has your polling shown?
Support for Proposition 16 is well below 50%. Currently, 31% of likely voters say they would vote yes, and 47% would vote no. with a notable 1 in 5 voters undecided about this effort to add diversity as a factor in public employment, education, and contracting decisions. When we look across regions, we find that the San Francisco Bay Area and Los Angeles are the only regions with more than 1/3 support. We also find fewer than half of likely voters across demographic and racial and ethnic groups say they would vote yes, whereas many are currently undecided in each group. We also find women and men are about as likely to say they would vote yes, although women are more likely to say they do not know how they would vote at this time. And then building on Scott's and Ben's comments, I mean, this outcome would give some indication of how residents are really thinking about the ways race is woven into their lives. And this proposition really tells us something about how people are feeling about racial justice issues. And our survey touched upon this. And on the topic of race relations, we found it a major shift in public opinion over time. 6 in 10 Californians are now saying that race relations in the U.S. are worse than they were a year ago. So Prop 16 should definitely have some interesting outcomes.
You know, I'm certainly not an expert, but I was really surprised when I saw the results of your polling, but perhaps I shouldn't be. You know, affirmative action is legal in most of the country. I mean, in 42 states, you know, but Californians got rid of it back in the mid 90s. Ivy Cargill, you are an expert as a political science at CSU Bakersfield. What can you tell us about the mindset of Californians that explains why they are so opposed to the idea of affirmative action?
I have to admit, I'm not surprised. I am not surprised, one, because if you watch any type of advertisement or any political advertisement that is happening right now, we're not really hearing very much about Proposition 16 and it being framed in the way that everyone who has been speaking so far has been framing it in regards to trying to achieve equity in all of the different public arenas that it's supposed to hit. I think back to, I was around and well when Proposition 209 was being debated, and a lot of that framing of affirmative action is still around, which is this idea of quotas. And I'm assuming that people in my age range and people who are older, I think those folks are thinking about that same idea, right? The fact that it's about quotas and the quotas shouldn't be allowed when it comes to public contracts or higher education or really any public space, right? The folks who framed Proposition 209 back in the 90s did a really fantastic job. And that narrative, that language is still around and still in people's minds. I don't know that despite the racial reckoning that we are facing right now with the murder of George Floyd and even with what is happening literally right now in Kentucky with the outcome of the indictment for the murder of Breonna Taylor, I don't think people are making that connection in regards to race relations is one thing, but then achieving equity in other public places is actually a way to deal with what is happening racially. Because there isn't any advertisement, there hasn't been any assistance provided to voters in California to help them make those connections. While people in California are thinking that, yes, we need to get better about race relations, and this summer is really helping us understand that, I don't think they're making the connection to Proposition 16 and the actual inequitable effects that occurred at the particularly in public contracts and in public education for Black and Latino, Latina, Latinxes in the state of California when they were applying for the different opportunities. The other thing that I think would be interesting, right, is thinking about like the USC scandal and the UCLA report that came out regarding, you know, the effect of legacy seats and the ability that wealthy parents have to pay for entrance for their children into these schools that more often than not, Black families and families of color in California don't have. So I think it really has to do with the framing and the lack of advertisement that has been done in regards to this proposition.
It's remarkable that the legacy of 209 is still so alive and well today. Let's move on to a couple of propositions that could potentially expand the number of voters in this state. Ben Christopher, election reporter for CalMatters, give us a quick overview of Propositions 17 and 18.
Sure. So Proposition 17 would restore the right to vote to people who are on parole. So unlike some states, California does allow people who have committed felonies and who have served their time and are now free to vote and to run for office. But that's only once they are no longer on parole. So that means that there are roughly 40,000 Californians who are not in prison, but unable to legally cast a ballot or run for office. And so if Prop 17 passes, that would change that. Prop 18 would let some 17-year-olds vote. So this is another voting rights measure. It would allow a 17-year-old to vote in California in a primary or special election if they're going to turn 18 by the general election. So it's a bit of a special case. It's not all 17-year-olds, but the argument here from proponents is if someone's going to be eligible to participate in an election in November, we might as well give them the opportunity to participate in the primary that determines who will be on the ballot in that November election, and also just a good way to start fostering that habit of voting early on. So those are the two ballot measures that would expand voting rights.
Scott Rodd, based on your reporting for CAP Radio, what's the word on the ground? Do these propositions have much support?
You know, there's definitely a push behind Prop 17 to expand that voting access by groups like the ACLU, and it also has pretty strong support from state Democrats as well. And on Proposition 18, I think this falls in line with this continuing push to get younger people engaged in the voting process. And this would expand the number of people who can vote and get them engaged at a younger age. And I mean, just from, I'm not sure if there's been official polling on this, but just sort of anecdotally, what we've been hearing and seeing is, you know, if you turn 18 by the general election, you know, it's easy to understand why you may not be as invested or in the know on the election if you couldn't participate, you know, months earlier in the primary. So there is also the question of, you know, getting people engaged in that election earlier on. And so that come November for a general election, they're informed, they're ready to go, and they're not kind of just coming into it a little green, so to speak.
Ivy Cargile, you're an assistant professor of political science at CSU Bakersfield. How big of an impact could these two propositions have on the electorate?
I think it can have a positive effect in regards to expanding the franchise, as has already been noted by Scott and Ben. I think that it really just depends. I think the idea of expanding the franchise, and particularly thinking about specifically about Proposition 17, where, look, if folks have done the time for the crime that they committed, their ability to vote should be reinstated, because as a citizen of this country, that's what they're guaranteed. And so I even think with Proposition 18, with letting 17-year-olds to vote so long as they turn 18 by the time the general elections is happening is also a good idea to get people more engaged in the process. This is a representative democracy. We do need every voice heard as much as is possible. But the reality is that it's really just going to matter on the election and what is happening at the time. So as everyone was just speaking, it just made me think about the 2018 midterm election, where we did see a 16% increase of 18 to 29-year-olds who voted in 2018 versus 2014, which was the last midterm election. That's great. You know, the midterm election for 2018 had huge voter turnout, but that has to do with the mobilization and with the urgency that young Americans felt, whether it be because they were in support of this administration and the congressional candidates who were saying that, you know, vote for me and I'll support the president, or whether it be because they were in opposition. You know, there's always got to be something that mobilizes people, whether it be former felons, as in Proposition 17, or, you know, young voters. It really is very contextual. It has everything to do with the fact that if people aren't enthused, if they're not contacted by campaigns and candidates, you know, it doesn't matter that people have the franchise, they're not going to use it. They have to understand how the election and the candidates connect to them.
Hi,
great point.
Olsa Dykeman. Can I pipe
Please.
In now? Yeah. So although PPIC, we did not poll on these two ballot measures, I can point to research we've done on Californians likely voters as well as Californians electorate. So we understand that the people who go to the polls in California are very different from those who don't. And this gap has far-reaching implications for our democracy as well as our political future. Based on our research, we understand that voters in California tend to be older, white, affluent, college-educated, and homeowners, whereas non-voters tend to be younger, Latino, lower-income, less educated, and renters. And these economic differences between voters and non-voters really have important implications for policymaking. And we understand that this divide between voters and non-voters is deep and persistent. And the fact that a relatively small, unrepresentative group of Californians elect officials and make policies is definitely a challenge for the state, especially as the population continues to change. And California really just has its long way to go before the electorate reflects the size and diversity of the state as a whole. sort of building on what Ivy was talking about, you know, improving civic engagement is critical, particularly in the wake of the 2016 election, as well as building confidence in elections and trust in government is going to be paramount as we head to the polls this fall.
So I'm sure many people listening have ridden in an Uber or had food delivered through an app like DoorDash or Instacart. Many of our listeners probably have been employed by these companies and thus are paying really close attention to Prop 22. Scott, what exactly will this initiative do?
So to understand Proposition 22, it's helpful to go back to last year. And you can go further back to understand how this evolved, but we'll just go back to last year. The state legislature passed a law that made it harder for companies to classify their workers as independent contractors. And instead, they would have to classify them as employees, which means offering benefits and protections like health insurance, workers' compensation, extending unemployment insurance, and many other sorts of benefits and protections. And a focus of this law that was passed was gig companies, so Uber, Lyft, Postmates, et cetera. And these companies classify their workers as contractors. And the lawmakers who passed this law and the supporters of it said these workers should be employees. They should be guaranteed a certain wage. They should have health benefits and so on and so forth. This was obviously hotly contested by these gig companies. And they've said that if that is the case, if they have to start treating their workers as employees, that would take away things like the flexibility of that workers have and ultimately would kind of upend their business model. So this has gone to court. It's currently being litigated. And now there's this ballot proposition. And what this proposition would do is it would exempt those gig workers from being classified as employees. It would allow them to remain as contractors. And in doing so, though, it would also extend some modified benefits there. If you drive a certain amount of time or if you work a certain amount of hours, you would have access to things like a health insurance fund and some other similar kind of benefits like that. But, you know, as you said, you know, if anyone's sort of paying attention to the political sphere right now, if anyone's turning on a TV right now, certainly you're seeing Proposition 22 ads. There is just a tremendous amount of money flowing into this measure. Last time I checked, upwards of $180 million from gig companies. So a very hotly contested and debated proposition right now.
Yeah, I've certainly Lyft, Uber, and DoorDash are putting significant money in support of 22, but it is strongly opposed by labor unions who have a lot of political influence in the state. Ben Christopher, election reporter for CalMatters, who do you see coming out on top here?
Well, it's really tough to say because I think in California, often if the Democratic Party and some of the largest unions in the state are on one side, that's a good side of the proposition to bet on. On the other hand, as Scott said, there is $184 million and counting on the S side compared to $10 million. So again, if you've turned on the TV and seen any ad for a proposition this year, it's undoubtedly yes on 22. And so, you know, we're almost in unprecedented terrain with that kind of political spending. And so we'll see. And honestly, I'd be curious to hear more about the polling on this, but it does seem like this is an issue that does cut across Democratic Party allegiances, whereas, you know, certainly organized labor is firmly opposed to this measure. But, you know, a lot of Democrats also like Lyft and Uber, at least like using the service. So unclear how this is going to all play out.
Well, I thank you all for bringing us up to speed. I feel more informed after talking with you today. Ben Christopher, election reporter for CalMatters, Scott Broad, state political reporter for Capital Public Radio, Alyssa Dykeman, research associate at the Public Policy Institute of California, and Ivy Cargyle, assistant professor of political science at CSU Bakersfield. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.